from 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, welcome to The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you.
Hello and welcome to The Art of the Matter. I'm Sharon Gamble. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Buscelli Wallerap Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
And I'm Travis DiNicola. Today I'll get a preview of the annual book art show that brings the Heron Art Library to the Harrison Center.
I'll talk with arts writer Lou Harry about a trip he's putting together to see the Chicago Shakespeare production of Sunday in the Park with George.
And I'll chat with Rita Cohn about a new play she's written for the State Fair. Plus, there'll be our arts calendar we call
What'll We Do? All that and more right after the latest news from NPR. What makes a book a work of art? You certainly can't judge it by its cover, as Travis DiNicola found out from Sonia Stalm, the head librarian at the Heron Art Library. They talked about the upcoming bookmark show at the Harrison Center for the Arts. The collaboration is now in its fifth year.
You've brought some beautiful, beautiful books with you, which our listeners can't really see, but we're going to talk about those in a minute. But before we jump into all that, I want to ask you a question that I always have with art books, because some of them are such incredible objects and they're so beautiful. And I am a person who loves art and who loves books. And with books, I just want to get my hands on them and open them up and crack them open and start tearing through them. And art books always sort of throw me because of that sense of, you know, this is often a, if not limited edition, a unique, it's often a one edition, handmade, a beautiful piece. And all those instincts that I have with a book are sort of out the window because you can't, you know, everything that I know about not touching a painting comes into play. So what am I supposed to do? How do I get past that and really start to learn how to enjoy an art book?
I think one of the unique and really nice aspects of the Heron Art Library Artist Book Collection is that, you know, I look at it as a teaching collection. Mm-hmm. And if you were to come into the library and you had a few different pieces that you wanted to look at, you would be able to sit down and actually look at the book or the artwork and hold it and experience it. I think that's one of the unique and really important aspects of the collection. You know, I look at it as a teaching collection. And
I mean, artists who create art books generally want you to pick them up and open them up, right?
I think so. I think for the most part. They can either be works of art that are a one of a kind, or they could be in editions of up to 200 objects, maybe. But I think for the most part, an artist wants you to experience it and to interact with it and to, you know, it's a form of communication and trying to communicate with the person and help them experience what it is that they're trying to convey.
Do you pull out the white gloves when you're...
No. Actually, we don't. We ask people to wash their hands to get the oil off their hands. And, but no, the gloves tend to leave a residue on the items.
Huh. So. Do you get that, though, people who all of a sudden get very nervous about touching an art book because of that preciousness of it? Or?
I think some people may, and I think people don't expect to be able to come in and actually handle, particularly we have high school classes that will come in.
Sure.
And we'll, you know, there's some oversight there, either myself or another staff member is there to help, because if something isn't going to move a certain way, and if you force it, chances are you're going to break it. So to just give a little bit of oversight and guidance in how to handle the items is important. But I think it's always a really nice surprise when these classes come in and they can actually handle the books and look at the materials and the structures and the things that, you know, I mean, my goal is to bring together a collection that's going to really inspire a student.
Tell me a bit about the collection that Heron has. I know it's quite extensive. I mean, hundreds of pieces are included in it, correct?
We have up to probably almost 500 fine press and wow. artist book items at mm-hmm. this point in the collection. When I first started with the library back in 96, we only had one or two items.
Okay.
It's through the years, there's been a really nice coming together from different opportunities, from the directions the school has taken with the curriculum, to working with some really important donors. We mm-hmm. have a donor, Mr. and Mrs. Holman, have been very, very supportive, and you know, work closely with them to build the collection.
And the collection includes art from art books from artists from all over the world, not just Heron School of Art and Design students and faculty or visiting artists.
Right.
I mean, you've really been working on amassing a great collection. Is there any specific theme to the collection or something that guides you, or is it just really trying to find interesting art books?
It's mostly about how that person has the materials they've worked with. Mm-hmm. I'm looking for different types of structures and how that artist has represented whatever that message is that they're trying to share, and looking for unique ways. You don't even know it. You don't know that's out there.
Well, let's talk then about maybe some of the pieces that you brought in, because you did bring in a number of different physical examples of art books. And again, since our listeners can't see them, if you could maybe choose one to describe.
I brought a few items that are posted on our website.
Mm-hmm.
If you go to the Heron Library website and click on the link to the artist books, you'll see a couple of these. And actually, one of these we have a video when we had the first show that we did with a collaboration that we did with the Harrison Center mm-hmm. for the Arts. We produced a video to talk about our collection. Stephanie Sagala is one of the artists that did this one. It's on the beach.
And the piece you're looking at that's in your hands, it sort of looks like a box, a small mm-hmm. box covered in handmade paper with a little hole in it that looks like it could be like a piggy bank or a money
sure.
bank or something.
Sure, and that's the idea. It's mm-hmm. a bank to put your thoughts into.
Hmm.
And what she did, she collected... always a little nervous about paraphrasing the artist, but she collected bottle caps off the beach. And then these bottle caps, she's hand painted, and there are different sayings on the inside of the bottle caps. And with the box here, then you can, you know, deposit your thoughts into this box about her walk on the beach.
So elements here of a book. You've got certainly the paper, the handmade paper, that's sort of a light mm-hmm. bluish-grayish that's wrapped around this box. You've got elements of text. But in many other ways, it doesn't look anything like a book.
No. But it's a container or a means of expression for an event or a something that's very personal to the mm-hmm. to the artist, and that's where I think the idea of the book comes into play.
What's another one that you have with you?
Another one, this is Smoke by Amy Pickle.
And this one looks like a pack of cigarettes.
Looks like a pack of cigarettes. You take the top off the cigarettes, and looks like there's 8 cigarettes in here that are rolled.
Kind of big ones, but yeah.
Yeah, a little big. And this artist this is about her memories of her grandfather. She mm-hmm. had very very fond memories of him. He was a smoker, and if you take the end off of the cigarette and you unroll it,
oh,
it becomes
scroll.
A scroll.
Mm-hmm.
And there are some of her thoughts. This one is about dreams.
Interesting. So what would be the white paper of each cigarette is actually the scroll, and the mm-hmm. filter sort of acts as a cap to hold it in place, all mm-hmm. rolled up.
Right.
And so this, and you said that one's on dreams.
Mm-hmm.
So each one is a different remembrance of her.
Of her grandfather. This mm-hmm. is about dreams. I haven't read this, but basically there's a correlation there between dreams and dreams of her grandfather and memories of her grandfather.
So where physically is the art book library located? Is it the Heron School of Art and Design, or is it the IUPUI library? It's at Heron?
We're within the Heron School of Art and Design.
Okay.
We're centrally located within the building,
mm-hmm.
and you can see it.
So it's something that's open, certainly not just to Heron students, but to other students who want to come by and
sure.
visit the library at the Heron School of Art and Design.
Sure. We're open
mm-hmm.
During the summer hours.
Mm-hmm.
We're open 8 to 5 Monday through Friday. And then during the academic year, we're open 8 to 6 Monday through Thursday and 8 to 5 on Friday.
Mm-hmm.
We are closed on the weekends.
Okay. Now, this partnership with the Harrison Center, and Harrison
mm-hmm.
Center is, anyone who listens to Art of the Matter knows, is one of our favorite organizations to work with. Always great shows that they have each and every month, and great artist studios over there at 16th and Delaware. This is the fifth year, I believe, for the partnership between your library and the Harrison Center, where they're able to show off parts of your collection, correct?
Mm-hmm.
As
we
well.
Do.
Mm-hmm. And then there's a whole bunch of other stuff tied into it, but
sure.
Tell me about why this partnership is so important to you.
It's been a wonderful venue to develop awareness about the book arts genre here in Indianapolis, to give book artists an opportunity to exhibit their works. It's a juried exhibition.
Mm-hmm.
There's a call for works that goes out, and then the curators and staff at the Harrison Center actually pull the show together. And
the one last year that I still remember so well that I thought was absolutely brilliant was the piece that was essentially sort of a three-dimensional map of Dublin, created
mm-hmm.
out of the works of James Joyce. And it was just so brilliant to use the text of,
uh-huh.
from his books and the physical paper from his books to create Dublin. What a
sure.
great, brilliant idea.
Sure. They're really strong pieces. It's one of the really exciting aspects of the show, is that you really don't, like, I've seen the list of the artists that will be in this show that's coming up, but I have not actually seen any of the works yet.
Mm-hmm.
So when we go, there'll be a pre-exhibit event Thursday night, and we'll get to view the work, and it'll be exciting to see, because it's always very strong work, and you just can't anticipate.
Now, will some of that work, you think, end up at the library?
It possibly could.
Mm-hmm.
We haven't. I don't think we've purchased anything in the past. We do have a program that happens during the event where Vamp and Tramp Booksellers are
mm-hmm.
a book arts vendor that I work with, and the Holmans and I work with to build the collection. And they come and they do a show and tell of new book works that they've acquired through their travels. And so oftentimes we'll, maybe working with the Holmans, we might purchase a couple pieces through Vamp and Tramp.
So Sonia, I know your training is as a librarian, but have you been creating your own books as well? Do you get tempted to do so?
Oh, I do. I mean, I get tempted. Mm-hmm. I don't. Actually, I've done a little bit of paper making
mm-hmm.
recently, but my background is in fine arts, and I first learned about the genre when I was in college studying painting and drawing. I have a master's in painting and drawing from the University of Georgia. And so there's a personal
okay.
passion there, too.
Of course, of course.
Travis DiNicola with Sonia Stelm, the head librarian at the Heron Art Library. The opening of the Bookmark Show at the Harrison Center for the Arts is Friday, August 3rd from 6 to 9 p.m. For more information, you can visit harrisoncenter.org, harrisoncenter.org. To learn more about the Heron Art Library Book Arts Collection, search IUPUI's website for the Heron Book Arts site. Heron Book Arts on IUPUI's website. You're listening to The Art of the Matter on WFYI 90.1 FM Public Radio.
IBJ Arts columnist Lou Harry remembers exactly how he fell in love with the musicals of Stephen Sondheim. This October, he's taken a group of folks from Indianapolis to Chicago on a bus trip to see the Chicago Shakespeare production of Sunday in the Park with George. And he came in to tell Sharon Gamble about the sophisticated appeal of Sondheim.
Before we get to the details of the trip, I want to talk about you and Sondheim. Where did that start?
Oh, boy. I think that started in high school. When I was back in the days when schools would actually take a lot more field trips.
I remember those.
And I was the kid in school, little town in South Jersey, and I would sign up and become a member of school clubs just because I knew they would go on trips to Philadelphia or New York, no matter what, whether they were going to art museums or theater productions or anything. If I heard that the Key Club, you know, would take a trip every year, I became a member of the Key Club or joined the student council or anything else. I'm all over the yearbook.
Were your parents supportive of this?
Yeah, they were great. You know, no, why not? No problem. But not, you know, we were in...
Our kid's a conformist. Yeah, he's a joiner.
We were in a kind of cultural wasteland down there. I grew up in a kind of honky-tonk shore town. We didn't have a movie theater in the winter. We didn't have legit theater at all. We didn't have concert halls. We didn't have anything like that.
What was closest then?
The closest was you drive a half an hour to a movie.
Wow.
Or, no, an hour. It would have been an hour.
Oh, my gosh.
Or you... Or that's kind of it.
How did you know that other world existed? Were you a big reader?
I was a big reader. My mother never played music around the house, but she had these albums, which I always imagined she played when I was out
Went
of the
to
house.
School. Sure.
And there was, you know, West Side Story and The Most Happy Fella and, you know, Gypsy and those kind of things. And I loved those. But I started doing these trips in high school. And I got it through kind of, you know, an interest in film and things like that. But went on a class trip to see what was supposed to be a kind of edgy musical that I had never heard of called Sweeney Todd, The Demon Barber of Fleet Street.
How old were you?
I was in high school. I was probably a sophomore in high school.
Wow.
And it was the original production. And I had been to New York. Oh, I had begged my mother at one point. She was the kind of person, we didn't have that much money, but once a year she would go up to the Metropolitan Opera. And once I said, can I go with you and go to see something on Broadway? And I went to see I thought I was going to see Frank Langella in Dracula.
Ooh.
Which I thought was great. I was building up. I was so excited. It was going to be my first Broadway show. I got there, and Frank Langella had left the week earlier.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
No, don't be, because his replacement was an actor who I'd never heard of, Raul Julia.
Oh, my goodness.
Who was fantastic, and I was in, like, the third row, and it hooked me on theater completely. So I'm going on all these... all these trips whenever possible. One of them was to see Sweeney Todd, and we were way up in the cheap seats of what was then, I think, the Eurus Theater, and I was just riveted. It was amazing to me.
What was it? What was it that hooked you?
It was the drama. It was the intensity of it. It was the commitment of the actors. It was the fact that something could be funny and musically beautiful and intensely ugly and... all those things that it wasn't about, okay, this is the point where the hero does this and we like him for that. This
right.
is the point. You know, you kind of get behind the guy, but wait a minute, he's a mass murderer. But wait, she's funny, but she's also completely off her rocker. And, and all the while having this glorious music. And fell in love with it. So from there, I developed a sort of, Sondheim was always a... you know, one of the core in seeing the original production of Into the Woods in New York and seeing the original production of Passion and somebody who wasn't always, I think, as successful. The productions weren't always as successful as the scores, but was very interested in those. But I did not get a chance to see Sunday in the Park with George when I was in New York, when I would go back and forth to New York. I'm not quite sure why. I think at the time, maybe I just thought, I guess I was avoiding works of theater and film and everything else that were about artists.
Okay.
Because I always, when I'm reading a book, if the main character is a novelist, I'll usually put the book down after a page or two. I'm just not that engaged by it.
And I've often wondered why there are so many writers who write about writers.
I think by the time they get to their third book, they ran out of ideas.
And it's like, it's not that universal a life.
Right. But then so it took me a while to really warm up to the fact of how really amazing Sunday in the Park with George is. This is Sondheim's show that's kind of sort of about George Surratt, the artist, but not really. And it's more about the art of trying to create something out of nothing and incorporate that into your life. You know, how do you, when you see the activity outside the window that you want to participate in, but you know that you might lose the moment and not be able to paint this hat the way it should, and you're sort of have this vision and so afraid of losing it, and personal relationships suffer and everything else. And then the musical takes this gigantic leap from first being about the creation of this painting that we can all go up to Chicago to see, to a more contemporary story that echoes some of the same themes. It's a really remarkable work with beautiful, beautiful music. And I have still yet to see a great production of it. I saw a smaller one in Philadelphia, and I've been hungry. It's one of those that's on my list. I have seen it, and I've seen the recording of the Broadway production and all that, which is great. But I've always wanted to see it really come alive on stage.
Yeah, there's something that you lose when you're watching it on a screen.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So this trip.
Yeah.
Where'd this come from?
Well, the other piece of it.
Outside of your desire to pursue one more production to see if this is the one.
Right.
with some of your closest friends.
Back when I worked at an arts magazine in Philadelphia, we started doing these small road trips, trying to get our readers connected to the arts in different ways. And those were some of the best experiences that I had at that magazine. We'd go, you know, off into the farmlands where some, you know, artist was creating something in his barn studio. Or we'd go, go to a theater, a small theater somewhere in the suburbs where, an actress was performing, and we'd do a Q&A afterwards. Just, I'm constantly interested in finding ways to connect people to the arts in different ways.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been wanting to do that at IBJ for a while. I touched base with a group called Interlude Tours that was already doing some of this kind of thing, taking, you know, interesting trips, arts-related trips to Cincinnati, Louisville, Chicago. And I thought maybe there's a way to put these things together, to bring their sort of expertise in organizing these trips with our reach to our audience, my passion for kind of hosting these kind of things, mm-hmm. doing trivia on the bus, doing making connections with stuff that's happening here, giving backstory on the material, making connections wherever we're going so that people get access in a way they wouldn't normally do it. So what I pitched to them and we're collaborating on is it's kind of Sunday in the Park with George and Lou. we are going to be taking a bus trip on October 20th up to Chicago. First stop, on the way up, we're going to have a blast. You know, we got to do trivia, got to do some Sondheim history, got to do all that kind of thing. We get to Chicago and we go to the Art Institute of Chicago, where Sunday afternoon on the Isle of Le Grand Jatte, 1884, is on display. You know the painting, you've seen Ferris Bueller dance by it, you've seen it copied. This is the just pointillist masterpiece that's there. So we go to the art museum. We see the painting. We spend quality time at one of the great Midwest, one of the great U.S. art museums. Kind of do lunch on your own. And then we go out to Navy Pier, where Chicago Shakespeare Theater is housed in a beautiful theater. This Chicago Shakespeare Theater won the Tony Award for Best Regional Theater in 2008. They are
first rate.
You're not going to find many more acclaimed regional theaters than these folks. Well, they're going to be staging Sunday in the Park with George. we're going to see that. We're going to take a backstage tour of the theater. We're going to meet some of the people involved in the production. And then we're going to come home with a box dinner on the way home for more conversation and fellowship.
There'll be sing-alongs on the bus
and
on
all
the
that.
Way home.
Don't be surprised if a sing-along. I'll see if we can get a keyboard in there. You don't know what's going to happen. And that's, to me, that's the joy of it. I mean, it's great to be able to. If we weren't doing this, I would be probably hopping Megabus up on my own or with somebody and going to see it. But I would love to do it with a busload of fellow aficionados.
Sure.
And even if you don't, even if you've never been to a show outside of Indianapolis, even if you only know Sondheim from the lyrics to West Side Story and Gypsy, it's still, this is not a snobby thing. I'm just a guy from New Jersey who loves this stuff.
You don't have to know the answers to the trivia questions.
No, not at all. Not at all. We're going to make it fun, and you're going to see what promises to be a world-class production. Still waiting for the casting to be announced, but whether it's the best Chicago actors who work there or whether it's some name in the cast, we'll let you know on that. And, seats are still available. We're selling seats. People have been enthusiastically reacting to this and some other things that we're going to be doing. Hint, hint, War Horse.
Oh.
Trip there coming up. Oh, the other thing I want to underline is we're trying to emphasize on these road trips, and I hope to do a few of these a year.
Right.
Things that are not happening here in Indianapolis. I don't want to take...
You don't want to take people's dollars out
right,
of town.
No, we're not trying to take people's right. dollars out of town. We're trying to expand the horizons of the arts, the patrons and the potential, people who just want to see great stuff. I think it fuels passion. I believe that the people on this bus, believe me, we're going to be talking about the Indiana Repertory Theater's production of A Little Night Music that's coming up this
sure.
season. Footlight Musicals is doing Follies, which is very rarely done. They're going to be doing that this season. We're going to be talking about a lot of stuff that's happening right here in central Indiana that's Sondheim connected. So all that's going to be happening, door prizes, all that kind of thing, and that's on October 20th.
Sharon Gamble with the IBJ's Lou Harry. You can find out more about the October 20th Sunday in the Park with George and Lou trip at IBJ.com. Look for Lou's arts and entertainment blog or just search for Sunday in the Park with George and Lou.
Hey, Travis.
Yes, Sharon.
You know what to do when a hot night beckons?
Go out and chase fireflies? what do you got in mind there?
You can do that, too, but mm-hmm. you can also listen to some great hot music and dance, because you're already hot.
There you go.
We have some suggestions for your hot summer nights here on, and yes, I know, there are children listening. Don't worry, mm-hmm. we're not going there. On our calendar that we call, What Do We Do?
What do you got that's
Actually,
so hot?
Well, I happen to love big band music. And
yeah.
the Glenn Miller Orchestra, which is still around,
oh,
though Glenn Miller left us a long mm-hmm. time ago. But the Glenn Miller Orchestra is still going, and it's appearing with the Indianapolis Symphony Orchestra. If you're hearing us on Friday night, you want to make plans for tomorrow night. If you're hearing us on Saturday afternoon, you still have time. World famous Glenn Miller Orchestra. And if you don't know big band music from the 30s, 40s, and 50s, you'll know why so many people love it, even if they weren't alive to listen to it at the time. In the Mood, Tuxedo Junction, Moonlight Serenade, Chattanooga Choo Choo, and as they say, many, many more. You can relax underneath the stars or reminisce on the Prairie dance floor. Yep, there'll be a dance floor at Symphony on the Prairie for this one. You can find
Very
out
cool.
more at the Indianapolis Symphony Orchestra's website and go out and enjoy a hot summer night.
That sounds delightful.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, I always look forward to First Fridays, of course, and there's actually a lot going on in Irvington coming up at First Friday. I mean, usually we talk a lot about all the stuff going on at Harrison Center and up on down at the Arts Council's office on Pennsylvania, as well as, of course, downtown Square. But Irvington has some cool stuff coming on August 3rd for First Friday, including Ron Tanner is going to be signing copies of his book From Animal House to Our House, A Love Story, from 5:30 to 8:30 at Book Mama's. And Book Mama's is just off of Washington Street by Lazy Days Coffee Shop. And this book sort of tells the story of the renovation of a fraternity house maybe wasn't left in the best care, and how it becomes a family home. But what's really fun about this is that a percentage of the sales from the evening are then be donated back to Irvington's historic home, the Benton House. And I know you're a big fan of that, Sharon.
I am.
And there's also a whole bunch of other things going on that night as part of efforts to raise money for Irvington's historic house, the Benton House, and including as well as some concerts going on with Delta Duo playing some great Delta blues in the Underground 9, and also the Ink Slingers Theater Poetry event in Underground 9 as well, and there's also other First Friday stuff going on at the Irving Theater and Lazy Days as well, all coming up in Irvington on August 3rd.
You should just buy a house in Irvington. There You're
going to
go over there and enjoy everything going on. Your window of opportunity is closing quickly on a couple of things. The first is Steel Ponies, the amazing and very cool exhibition of famous and not so famous motorcycles at the Idlejord Museum. Also, on a completely different track, through August 12th at the Cincinnati Museum Center, A Day in Pompeii, the exhibition, which is just chock full of fascinating things. Gold coins, jewelry, marble and bronze statuary, body casts of the volcano's victims, eerily preserved in their final moments. I know it sounds creepy and dark and spooky, but people have been fascinated by Pompeii for countless years, and here's a chance to learn more about it. That, again, is in the Cincinnati Museum Center, which is in the repurposed Art Deco train station in Cincinnati.
Something a little bit closer to home, down at Garfield Park Arts Center on Saturday night at 8 p.m. July 28th, as part of their summer tribute to the filmmaker Ray Harryhausen. They are showing Jason and the Argonauts.
Oh, I love that.
It should be a lot of fun. Again, that is going to be at 8 p.m. Saturday night at Garfield Park. Tickets are only $3 at the door.
Didn't someone famous said that was the best film of all time? Tom Hanks.
Really?
Tom Hanks said Jason and the Argonauts is the greatest film ever made.
Huh.
Who'd have thunk it, right? No Citizen Kane for him. Mm-hmm. Jason and the Argonauts, I'm just saying. Another exhibit that's been up for a while, drawing to a close soon, September 2nd, it's Snapshot Painters and Photography, Bonnard to Vuillard. If you're thinking, what is that about? The invention in 1888 of the first handheld, easy-to-use camera for amateurs made spontaneous photography possible. And this is an amazing exhibition about painters and that now readily available technology a little more than a century ago. That's at the Indianapolis Museum of Art.
Sharon, I know it's always strange to say this at the end of July, but the IRT is about to hold their youth auditions for three of its upcoming shows, including A Little Night Music, Jackie and Me, and A Christmas Carol.
Burr.
That's right. So young actors of all ages, but especially ages 8 to 15, are definitely encouraged to audition. Auditions are coming up in the next couple weeks. You need to go to irtlive.com and get more information on auditioning for all those shows. But if you're a youngster or have one who wants to be in theater, this is a great time to do it.
Speaking of performing, another downtown venue, Chef Joseph's at the Connoisseur Room is hosting a wonderful duo, Roger Schmelzer and Mark Timko, on August 16th from 7 to 10. If you've not been to Chef Joseph's yet, it's a beautifully intimate little space that will remind you of a New York City or Chicago or maybe Los Angeles bar, but I'm going with New York City because it has that kind of old oak room feel. Roger Schmelzer loves the old art songs and some not quite so old, and you can hear Roger and Mark Timko again on August 16th from 7 to 10 at Chef Joseph's.
Very cool. Hey, last thing, and then we got to go, Sharon. Just a reminder that Indie Film Fest is going on this weekend.
Everywhere.
Wrapping up this weekend, so check out indiefilmfest.org for the whole schedule. Great shows worth seeing. And we'll be back next week on that calendar we call.
What'll we do?
You're listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Indianapolis and Central Indiana. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. If your arts organization has an event or activity of which you think we should be aware, please contact us at least 3 weeks in advance. You can write us at The Art of the Matter, care of WFYI, 1630 North Meridian Street, Indianapolis, Indiana, 46202. Or you can email us at artofthematter@wfyi.org. You can also hear The Art of the Matter on wfyi.org.
The State Fair is just around the corner, and one new attraction this year is the play Following Lydia Down the Ohio in 1824 as part of the Pioneer Village. The play by Rita Cohn follows seven spirited ladies who've hopped on a steamboat to start new lives for themselves. Travis DiNicola spoke with Rita about the work.
This seems like it's starting to get to be a habit, you doing writing plays for the State Fair. You've done this before.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. We started 3 years ago with Rich Lives,
mm-hmm.
which airs on WFYI occasionally, and it will be on August 31st.
Okay.
So check your August program guide.
Sure. Well, and of course, that's not the only one. I mean, you've been last year, I remember you had a collection of a whole bunch of oral histories that were being told.
Those were told about the homemakers
mm-hmm.
who are a part of our heritage. And the play this year has a different kind of heritage for us. Because these are seven ladies who mm-hmm. are coming down the Ohio River in 1824, which is about when a regularly scheduled steamboat travel occurred. And I like to believe, though I don't know for certain, since it's a little hypothetical, that I have these seven ladies who are based on real characters,
mm-hmm.
but they are not all coming down the Ohio River on the same boat at the same time in real life.
Okay, but in Following Lydia, they are. They're all together.
But in Following Lydia, they are. And, of course, since I'm taking literary license, I can assume that they're coming down on Mr. Shreve's wonderfully newly built steamboat, the Washington. But, of course, we don't know this for certain. There's a little uncertainty
of
and
course.
Intrigue here that we follow.
Well, let me ask you this. Who is Lydia?
Well, Lydia is Lydia Lathrop Roosevelt.
Okay.
And she is the wife of Nicholas Roosevelt,
mm-hmm.
who in 1800s was an engineer whose passion was boats, steamboats.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he knew about steamboats on the Hudson River, working with Robert Fulton and Robert Livingston, and they had started a very nice trade route between the Atlantic seaport and upward into the interior of New York, and then taking themselves, you know, connected to the Great Lakes. And so their idea was, let's get into the interior of the New West.
Yes.
Or for us, it's the Old West.
Right. But at that time,
it was
going
the
down
new
the Ohio.
West.
That was the New West.
Yes, yes. And the newly acquired Louisiana Purchase, with all of the hoopla that went on there, mm-hmm. and the research and the travel, and it was like, this is great. We can do this. We can travel the Ohio and the Mississippi and connect ourselves with the Gulf of Mexico, and we can have trade going up and down, and everyone laughed because the Ohio is a very shallow river.
Right, right.
It's full of snags and debris, and it's got the Falls of the Ohio at what is now Louisville.
So not easy to move up and down.
No, it's not easy to move up and down, and the draft of a steamboat
mm-hmm.
is just too great for this.
Mm-hmm.
But nothing daunted Nicholas. He designed a boat, and Lydia, his new young wife,
mm-hmm.
is going to go downriver with him. And Lydia defied all local, national, almost world protocol When she went down the river with Nicholas in 1811, October of 1811, she was pregnant. She did not go into confinement.
So that alone right there, I mean, the fact that she was pregnant and on the boat and didn't go into confinement, as you say, that was what was breaking with protocol.
That was breaking protocol. Her husband was breaking scientific engineering protocol. Everyone laughed at him and everyone pitied her. And yet, what happened is that eventually, you know, she did give birth to their son in Louisville, where they had to stop because they had to wait for the water to rise over the rapids. And then onward they proceeded. Within days of going downriver, they're hit by the New Madrid earthquake. Along the route, of course.
They didn't have an easy ride.
No, along the route, of course, is the Great Comet of 1811. And so, you know, the world's a little bit awry as it is, you know. And there's a sudden migration of squirrels going south.
Wait, Rita. I got to stop you there. So the squirrels, this is something that actually happened?
This is something that actually happened.
It
is
not made it into your play.
It is not an urban legend.
Okay, tell me about the squirrels.
So the script actually takes place in 1824, and these are seven ladies who drew their inspiration from Lydia Roosevelt.
So Lydia is not one of the seven ladies.
No, she is not. Okay. She, by 1824, is back in New York, living a normal life of her own adventures with her two children.
So the play that you've written, Following Lydia, follows these seven women as they make out together to really sort of create new lives for themselves. But before we get into that, I got to go back to two things here. One, I need to know, because you're leaving me hanging here, how did Mr. Roosevelt's boat do? Was it, I mean...
Oh, it did splendidly.
Okay.
It made its way from Pittsburgh down the Ohio, made the turn down to New Orleans, and went up again.
And back again. So it was designed in a way that it didn't displace too much water.
And, and the trade route began, and our world...
Changed.
You know, as we know it now, was affected and changed by an engineering feat that was supposedly an economic impulse, but the social, cultural, political implications were tremendous. And that comes into play in Following Lydia.
Okay, one more question before we get to Following Lydia, because I got to get back to this. The squirrels?
Squirrels?
Hundreds
for
of squirrels? What?
Unknown reason that remains one of those, you know, this is something for future film and television makers to discern why, but they, for the first time ever, and the only known time, decided to migrate south. Maybe they had a premonition of the New Madrid earthquake.
These squirrels just ran together and sort of, hundreds,
they ran
thousands?
Together, and since these are not Wizard of Oz creatures, they can't fly, and many of them drowned in the Ohio River trying to cross over to the South Bank into what is now Kentucky. It's just an amazing phenomenon. For many, many years, I thought, oh, this is a great urban legend.
Yeah.
And in researching for the work that I've done over the past 35 years on the Ohio River, I learned that, you know, there were too many
first-person
accounts of this happening to not have it corroborated.
Well, okay.
So here we are.
Here we are. Now back to your place. So Following Lydia, seven women who are going down the Ohio on a steamboat, It sounds to me, from what I've read and heard, they didn't necessarily know each other ahead of time. They're all going off on different adventures, but they're certainly inspired by Lydia, and that's what's bringing them together.
Yes.
And that's what your play is about at the State Fair.
Yes.
Okay.
And it, each of the women brings a different sensibility about herself and her destiny.
Mm-hmm.
And each brings a very strong sense of why she is going down this river.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have a musician who's going to New Orleans to start a theater troupe.
Mm-hmm.
And that's Myra Dworsky. He's an absolutely marvelous musician.
Mm-hmm.
And so we'll get to hear lots of instruments being played. Sandra Barton is a British merchant on her way to Cincinnati to open a ladies' shop. And, of course, this shocks the other ladies who say, you know, a ladies' fashion shop in Cincinnati, you might as well have stayed in Philadelphia. And then we have Sandra Dosterglick, who portrays an 1812 veteran widow who's claiming land in Brown County, Illinois.
Okay.
And then we have Susan Harless, who is a Cherokee Delaware woman who is going to the site of the Fall Creek Massacre to see that, to witness justice being done. Then we have Fran Lucas, who is the wife of a settler who already claimed land in Salem, Washington County, Indiana, to develop a maple syrup trade. But her particular specialty is she's a brewster. She's a brewer. Fort Pitt. Pittsburgh was the site of a major brewing operation that was a military operation. What did you serve? You served beer. The entire aspect of our country was based on the best potable beverage, and that was home-brewed beer.
Sure.
And she's going to start a tavern right alongside her husband's maple syrup. Operation, and she surely will be using that in her beer making. Janet Tyner is a teacher from Philadelphia on her way to New Harmony to work with the Owenites, and she is very much enamored with the concept of the complete aspects of education with the arts and with the sciences and the histories, etc., but that arts are at her center. Then we have Jeanette Simpson Edwards, who portrays a free black on her way to Cincinnati to encourage American colonization in Liberia. And they all start out with
quite
these
a mix here.
Destinies. But as we know, when we get on transportation vehicle, we tend to open up to strangers in ways that we wouldn't to each other, since you and I know each other well. But, you know, I might say something to you if I didn't know you.
Sure.
On an airplane or a bus.
And so each of these seven ladies is being portrayed, and as you said, so they're all based on historical women, and but in your play, they've been brought together on this boat, and it sounds like they're sharing their stories and learning from each other, and we learn a lot from that.
Yes, and they change and begin to think in terms of what is it that I'm going and doing. Some remain steadfast. And some say, well, maybe. So there's, you know, there's a reflection of us as we are now in what these ladies are. And some people might actually find their ancestors in this. I won't be a spoiler of our own play here.
Okay.
And tell you too much because you have to come.
Well, Rita, I know that it opens on, let me see here, on August 12th is the first day of the performance, on Sunday, August 12th, with a 12:30 performance in the Pioneer Village, and you have a number of performances that week at the State Fair, and both at the Pioneer Village as well as on another stage as well, right?
Yes, we have Pioneer Village has mm-hmm. two stages, mm-hmm. the small stage, which okay. is the music stage, and then the larger stage in what was the barn, the tractor barn, mm-hmm. and that's the Opry
okay.
stage.
And you'll be at both.
Yes, and they'll be at both on the 14th. We have an 11 and a 1 o'clock performance on the big Opry stage. And mm-hmm. then we go back to the small stage on the Wednesday, the 15th, for a 10 o'clock and a noon performance. And it's free with entrance to the fair.
Excellent.
So it's a nice place to sit down and visit a spell
yeah.
with seven ladies going down the river in 1824, intriguing us with their destinies that are entwined with ours today. And Tim Nanette from Pioneer Village is our producer, and we just have a good time telling our story.
Travis DiNicola with playwright Rita Cohn. Her new play, Following Lydia Down the River in 1824, can be seen at the upcoming Indiana State Fair, August 12th through the 15th as part of the Pioneer Village, and it's free with admission to the fair. It opens on Sunday, August 12th, with a 12:30 performance.
Thanks for joining us today. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Bocelli Wallrap Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
Please listen to The Art of the Matter again next Friday at 8 and Saturday at 4 when I get a preview of the Swiss Wine Festival.
I'll chat with the Art Center's Carter Wolf about their upcoming events.
And I'll talk with the Library System CEO, Jackie Needus. Plus, we'll have our arts calendar we call What'll We Do?
So please listen next weekend to The Art of the Matter here on WFYI for your information.
You've been listening to The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you. The Art of the Matter. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. Today's Art of the Matter was produced and edited by Travis DiNicola. The Art of the Matter on 90.1 FM, Indianapolis.